encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Dave Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. Manchester United through to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. They beat West Ham 3-1 on Wednesday, and they've got a match at Anfield against Liverpool on Sunday. So really no time to rest after winning a shiny thing, because the schedule just keeps going. But I mean, first impressions, we're through in the FA Cup, and we've got a decent matchup in the next round, Fulham at home again, which I think this is now certainly a record of cup games drawn at Old Trafford this season.
Straight.
Right. Yeah.
When was the last away when we had like Leicester away in the FA Cup when we lost?
Maybe. Yeah, because I mean, we lost to Middlesbrough like right off the bat.
And we lost to West Ham at home in the League Cup last year.
Yeah. So I guess it is the last time that we were drawn away, because we weren't good enough to have the opportunity last season.
Yeah.
But I mean, not a great game. Erik ten Hag rotated out Casemiro and Marcus Rashford, who coincidentally make things tick for Manchester United. West Ham go up 1-0 early in the second half. He brings on the reinforcements. United get three goals to end it. The Fred goal was definitely more of a vibes goal, and I think, Paulie, you said something like a "let's just go home now" goal.
It was the fifth minute. Yeah, it was the fifth minute of stoppage of four added minutes, and it was like at that point Bruno had the ball in the corner and he was just standing there, and even West Ham was just standing there, and it was like a very "we're done here," and yeah. The ref just didn't blow the whistle, and so I was like, so Fred basically said, "All right, we're done. Like, go home.
Yeah,
get out of here."
Van Veghorst too saw it as another opportunity for a goal contribution. He played well in the night, but really the Alejandro Garnacho goal, I think, is the one that's going to be remembered. It was the late winner. I think it was exactly the 90th minute that he scored it in. Kind of a rebound from a Veghorst shot falls to him. He takes one touch and then plants it in the far right corner. Is the magic of the FA Cup back at Manchester United? Is it calling to us now that we're trophy winners again?
It's certainly calling to us, because look at the other teams in the pot. I don't want to look past Fulham. And again, probably one of the more difficult, not the most difficult draw, but one of the more difficult draws you could have gotten, because there's only eight teams left, but not all eight are in the Premier League. And United are facing Premier League opposition. But not looking past Fulham. But this is another one where you look at it and basically six of the remaining seven teams, you're like, United should win this game.
Yeah. That was the feeling coming into this one too. West Ham, surprisingly, fighting to stay in the Premier League this season. Mikel Antonio probably had two chances where he should have scored, but De Gea closing him down on one of them and making another save on the other. Is this a game, I guess I'll ask, that we should be worried about anything that we saw other than depth? Or is this kind of another routine win similar to, you know, some of the other ones we've seen over the last month or so?
No, it's what happens if someone gets hurt, because you rotate the squad, and you understand that it's going to be bad, but like it just I remember old United teams where like Ferguson would rotate the squad and it was bad, but like they won. And on occasion he'd have to like bring Rooney off the bench to like save the match. But more often than not, it was like you bring Rooney off the bench and it's like, why? And he's like, oh, because, you know, we thought that they were getting a little bit more into the game. Or that Watford game in the FA Cup a few years ago where like Rashford and Martial didn't play, and then Solskjaer just like brought them off the bench for the last 10 minutes and it was like, why are you doing that? It's been concerning that every time Ten Hag rotates the squad recently, it's more so like, we don't even come close to scoring until, or we come close, like we don't really get a lead until he, you know, takes the bubble wrap off those starters and says, go back in the game. The fact that Casemiro had to come in at halftime wasn't even like a, let's get 60 minutes. If it's nil nil, 60, 65 minutes, like I think Rashford, Casemiro in 25 minutes can be the difference to score one goal and we'll win 1-0. It was like at halftime, I need to get Scott McTominay off. I need to get Casemiro on. It goes to show you that like all the tactics he has in there, which are there, you still need good players to put them to make everything work. And the drop off is extreme, because like the first 10 minutes of that match when West Ham were like being run off the pitch, and I was like, we are not playing good right now. Like we're bad. West Ham are just terrible. And then West Ham like got a little bit of a footing into this and suddenly looked like the better team for the next hour.
Nathan, did you get the chance to watch this game?
I watched most of it. Like I said, I was working a little bit while also keeping an eye on the game. I definitely caught all the second half. Kind of missed some of the more exciting parts at the beginning of the first half. So I guess I only got to see the team playing at full strength on Wednesday. So I think the thing that sticks out to me were like pretty good quality goals from United. Of course, you had the one that was chalked off. It looked like it was a really good free kick, and like it's kind of become Casemiro's calling card now, sneaking by and just getting a really good, powerful header on an in-swinging ball. Of course, he was ruled offside, but we're able to make up for it again by was that off of a corner or a free kick that Aguero ended up?
I think it was a corner.
Yeah, knocking in. So a successful set piece, which is exciting to see. And then Garnacho's goal is sick. I mean, I yelled. I was in my place of work yelling at that Garnacho goal. So that's the kind of stuff that I thought it was interesting listening to Talk of the Devils podcast. Shout outs to one friend of the pod that's on there. Where I think it was Carl that says, I don't know if Garnacho has it, but he has something. And I'd like to co-sign that. He certainly has something.
The best part of that goal was, we're not going to be here for another half hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that point I was like, United are going to win this game. It's just a matter of like, do I have to sit here for another half hour to watch for them to do that? So shout outs to Garnacho, who, I mean, he takes that touch. He's given acres of space and he takes that touch. And right after that ball like went off his foot, you like could see the angle and you're like, oh, he's going to do something cool here.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a classic FIFA goal, you know, just R1 in circle. Banger. Like, I mean, it doesn't miss. The finesse shot is beautiful. And what I like too about that is, I mean, Garnacho has proven that he's not afraid to shoot, but I mean, that's a really good finish. And so it's like, cool. He was in a position to score and he did so. And since we started doing this podcast together, we haven't necessarily always had players that could do that. So that was great.
It was nice that he did that 90 minutes into the game where he was out there from the first minute.
Yeah.
You know, so whereas we've talked about it in the past, he gets to run at tired legs. Well, this time he was one of those tired legs.
I think there's an Erik ten Hag quote attributed to that.
Yeah, where he said, make an impact from the start now. Like that.
Yeah.
Great advice. Great. Yeah. I mean, no other coach would ever think of doing that. That's the Erik ten Hag difference.
And for a player who's been in contract talks for what seems like, you know, 3 or 4 months now, he does have a contract expiring at the end of the season. Because of his age, he's not able to negotiate with other clubs until he becomes a free agent. But it seems like both he and United are on the same page of, you know, wanting him to stay here. The question then just becomes about money and, you know, what his role is going to be going forward. I'm pretty cool keeping things how they are now with, you know, he'll switch in for Rashford and start some games at left wing, or he'll come off the bench.
That's a lot an interesting of the time, question, though.
It is, because you're like thinking about his development, he obviously thinks he's on a trajectory to be, you know, one of the big players. A lot of fans seem to think he's on that trajectory. It's hard to know exactly what he would look like in that sort of role where there is significantly more pressure on him, or if he could even slot into other attacking positions. At this point, it seems like he's pretty much nailed in as a left winger, or left winger forward, whatever you want to call that role. And, you know, as we've talked about the last several years, that's the position that United are almost always strong at. You know, Jadon Sancho can play there. Marcus Rashford is going to play there in the form that he's in, you know, for the foreseeable future. Is Alejandro Garnacho okay with being, you know, in the kind of role that he's in now? I would hope so, because, you know, it's nice to have players who are okay with that sort of role.
I wonder if part of the conversation is like, if United goes, hey, let's see if Marcus can do this for a second year, and you have more of Marcus up front and you have Garnacho out wide, and they look at the striker market and they go, yeah, Victor Osimhen would be really nice, but he's going to cost us £150 million, and we have places that we need to fix elsewhere. Let's continue building the foundation for the house before we start buying the TV for it.
Yeah, that's exactly basically what I was going to say, is that United are in a position where they need to lower the wage bill to begin with. So, like, Alejandro Garnacho is a very important piece for them because he's cheap and they don't have to pay a fee for him. So getting him signed up and being like, you're going to be our backup left winger and rotational piece here. Like, you've got a very good player for, in a, you know, good value there. And like, if you're Garnacho, like as Colin said, like he's on this trajectory that he believes in, like he's going to want to play. There has to be some sort of fear in the back of your mind of, well, what happens if they bring, like, the club go and spend a lot of money on a striker and they bring in the striker that who stays fit and is producing, and that relegates Marcus Rashford to only playing as a left winger. Then it's, I'm only getting Marcus Rashford needs a breather minutes, where as opposed to when you're in the situation where they are in right now, where it's, we're going with Weghorst up top. And then in some games we need to switch it, whether it's Weghorst as a 10, Weghorst comes off, I'm getting in on the pitch there, and sometimes we're going to start Rashford up top. And I'm going to get my chance there. And like Nathan said, like, does the club, I guess they would have had to have made this decision probably by now, like, because your research, this helps you plan out what your targets are going to be over the summer, but also you're going to communicate that with Garnacho and say, like, this is where we see you. Like, instead, we're not going after the Victor Osimhen. We're going to target a, you know, someone like this, where we plan on using Marcus Rashford as both a left winger and a striker. So like, those minutes are going to be there for you. So it's a lot of pieces of the puzzle are intertwined here.
Yeah. And they got to be careful as they figure out who they're going to sign, because I believe Rashford is also negotiating for a new contract, and he's got a lot of ground to stand on when he says, probably, I want to be the highest paid player at Manchester United now. Like, how are you going to tell him no?
Because you're not Casemiro.
So,
me back when your name is Casemiro. And, oh, by the way, that's our highest earner for a good reason.
Yeah, but that's one of those things where it's like, this was the debate that we had a couple years ago, when it's like, we have to be careful about who gets what contracts, because then it upsets the balance of everything. Like, Alexis Sanchez comes in making all this crazy money, and everyone's looking at it like, well, I'm way better than him. That's why it was, you know, we're negotiating with probably De Gea right now, and De Gea is probably going to want a pay me for my past services. And less so a pay me for.
I think he's pretty set on, like, I'm going to take a pay cut here. Rashford deserves to be the second highest paid player at the club. No doubt about that. But, like, you know how these things work, and with inflation, it's It's if you sign your contract in 2021, the guy who signs his contract in 2024 is going to make more than you.
Lamar Jackson.
So the last contract that Marcus Rashford signed was, I believe, 2018 or 2019. And then maybe there was like an extension somewhere there along the way. Right after that, Anthony Martial signed his contract extension, which was like 6 years.
Martial signed right after Mourinho left.
He is still under contract through
good timing.
The summer of 2025.
Wasn't a coincidence.
And
yeah, but they've I'm pretty sure he has said he's going to run down his contract. He's basically playing to be a free agent and then be like, okay, United, now what are you offering me?
Are you talking about Rashford?
Yeah.
Okay. With Martial, he's on 250,000 a week. I think Rashford is something like 200,000 a week. If United are able to offload Anthony Martial this summer, if they even are interested in doing that, that's a sizable chunk of wages. I still think there's a possibility they just let David De Gea walk, which would be another, you know, pretty big chunk of the wage bill going away, as well as somebody who at the time upset the balance of wages at the club when he signed that contract extension. The apple cart.
I don't know if they can.
Well, I mean, I don't know if we can blame them for upsetting the apple cart. I mean, if you have a figure that you want and the club pays it, then, you know, good on you. Power to the workers.
Oh, no. He was going to sign that. And, you know, good on him. Get the bag. But
always get the bag.
It definitely seems like Erik ten Hag wants a different goalkeeper, but it's very different between I have a goalkeeper and I want a better one, and I don't have a goalkeeper. I need one this summer. Because as we've seen from Manchester City and Liverpool's acquisitions and Chelsea's when they got Kepa, if somebody has a goalkeeper that you want and you need them right now, they will charge you a premium price for it. A premium price that United are probably hoping to spend on a midfielder and then a striker this summer.
Yeah, and also, for as much as he may not want David De Gea, he is not too keen on giving anybody else a shot. Like, he brought in Martin Dubravka and played him twice. He brought in who's the guy, other, like, was it Nick?
Tom Heaton.
Not Nick Pope. It's
Dean Henderson.
Tom Heaton was already here. Who's the other guy we have on loan?
Dean Henderson.
No, the one that we brought in on loan in January. Colin's not paying attention, but he would know this.
It's Jack Butland.
Jack Butland.
Jack Butland. Yeah. Jack Butland, like, has he even made the bench?
I just said that.
So,
I think that's pretty indicative of, you know, how much of an impact he's making. That
exactly. Week. So it's like we signed him on loan and we're not even giving him a sniff. It all is different pieces of the puzzle. I don't think they can afford to let David De Gea walk because it's all different pieces of the puzzle. And like, it all comes into the financial situation, and it's not about the new owners or the Glazers or new owners and having being able to afford it. Like, United are a pretty self-sustaining club. Like, they can go out there and sign players. They can afford that. It's a compliance issue. And these new UEFA rules are big. Like, United have to slash their wage bill by a lot. It's the make whole clause is a big deal. They've got to be down to, you can only spend, you can only spend on transfer fees and agent fees and your coach's salary and your player wages. This year it's like 90% of your total revenue, and next year it goes down to 80%, and the year after it goes down to 70%, and United are around like 88%. So like, compliant as they've always have been, like this, they've always been compliant with FFP. It's just a matter of like, they go right up to the line. So they've got to slash budget, because like, your revenue is very finite. Like, their commercial revenue,
and in some cases artificial, especially in the post COVID world.
Well, but that's what UEFA, that's what teams like United are trying to get UEFA to clamber down on and be more strict. Like, the irony of if Qatar were to buy United is that they'd be very scrutinized in what those sponsorships are, and they'd be very scrutinized because teams like Manchester United said, hey, we need to scrutinize this better.
We can't be Red Bull Racing.
Right. It kind of shocks me that Qatar like hasn't bought like an F1 team, that like F1 hasn't become this thing right. yet with like, well, they just buy tracks. They just buy races, but that's
they just own the FIA now, right? I think it's the Saudis that own the FIA.
Or buy a baseball
team. But anyway, like, so the revenues are pretty finite. United's commercial revenue hasn't risen in like 5 years. And at this point, it's not going to rise next year. Even if you bring in new people and like a new owner comes in and oh, the PR is good and brands want to associate with you, like that's not happening in time for next year. That takes right. a long time. You also lost the person who was really, really good at that. Like, that's the one thing Ed Woodward was really good at, was he was a commercial whiz, and he's not with the club anymore.
Well,
your broadcasting revenue, you know what that's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you make the Champions League, that's worth about 100 million more, but remember, everybody took a 30% wage cut because they didn't make the Champions League. Those wages go right back up if they're in the Champions League. So you have to figure out a way to like boost up your revenues. And the only way to do that's through player sales. But most players aren't worth anything. Like, they've tried to sell Martial before and nobody's come and bought him. Like, and he's got a year left on his contract. You're not getting a big fee for that. So maybe maybe you sell him for £5 million and that's wage relief, but that's not going to boost up your thing, which means like Dean Henderson is one of the few players that United have that might really command a fee. In which case, you have to sell him. Mm-hmm. Especially as like Dean Henderson's not coming in and being going to be the number one goalkeeper for United. He's not good enough. He's, you know, you can argue with if he's a better fit for the modern game than De Gea, but like ultimately, he's not good enough to be the number one at Manchester United. Like Nottingham Forest, he was injured he had an injury that was going to make him miss like a month, and Nottingham Forest was like, let's get Keylor Navas. Like, that's... It tells you a lot about Dean Henderson, but if you could sell him, you have to, in which case, then if you let De Gea walk, now you got to replace two goalkeepers on top of all the other things you got to do with your squad. Like, that's just not great squad management. That's not good resource management. That if you can just get De Gea to take less wages, like you basically have to.
Yeah. Shout out to Cristiano Ronaldo for making clearing some wages a lot easier, by the way, back in October.
Right. But shout out to Cristiano Ronaldo for doing a year and a half of ridiculous wages that put us in financial hell.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's looking like a smart decision to maybe not have tried to keep Paul Pogba at this point, because he's only just now played for Juventus his first game since going back. But Pogba, you know, wages were maybe a factor in that decision as well. All right. So looking ahead to this weekend, we've got Liverpool at Anfield, a place where Manchester United have not won since, I believe, Wayne Rooney volleyed in that rebound in January of 2016.
You are correct. And I saw like the 11s from that game today, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. That
did Fellaini start?
Fellaini did probably start next to Morgan Schneiderlin.
That was in the middle of that like hell period from...
Is that Phil Jones and Chris Smalling as the center back pairing?
Possibly. No, Daley Blind was the center back.
Okay. Wow. But yeah, that was the middle of the like hell period of Louis van Gaal's last season, where I don't think they won a single game in December. And then January was like some more exciting games, but they were like the 3-3 against Newcastle, where they should have won that game on three different... But
then they won moments at Anfield, and then they played Liverpool in the Europa League and like got trounced.
Yeah. So
was it Ashley Young and Antonio Valencia as your fullbacks?
Probably, but maybe Mateo Darmian's in there.
Yeah, that was the season Luke Shaw broke his leg.
Yeah.
Mateo Darmian did play several games. He also scored a really good goal In like his only memorable Manchester United moment. I can't remember what game it was though.
It was against... not that memorable.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was against like Bournemouth or someone in the Premier League. So yeah, it's been a long time since we've won at Anfield. But possibly the most confident we've been going to Anfield in that amount of time as well. And people were making comments this morning about Jurgen Klopp's like response to being asked about United, and like I watched the video where he's talking about, you know, he kind of makes that comment as like, oh, the two most successful clubs in England. Thank you for not making me say that. Yeah, they're playing really well. They've earned their points and stuff like that. And like people were saying he was like rattled like Pep Guardiola has been. And I mean, if that's rattled, I prefer that to whatever Pep Guardiola's on right now. I feel like Pep is in like a watching conservative YouTubers conspiracy hole right now compared to, you know, how Jurgen Klopp sounds.
Cameron Borthwick-Jackson came off the bench in that game.
Oh my God. Where's he at now? What's he doing?
Like League Two.
Accrington Stanley or something. Did either of you watch the press conference clip that I'm talking about, or am I just like...
No, I sort of did. I sort of did. It's more like, you know, I saw somebody on Twitter say like, the last few years, Pep and Klopp have both been like saying very nice things about us and you know, complimenting us and talking us up a bit. And now they're focused on so many other things, and they're being a little bit weirder. And it really shows you, like, you know, they did that then because they didn't see us as a threat, and now they do. And now it's less about, oh, you know, United are coming along strong, they're doing some good things, and I'm being praiseworthy, because why start shit when, you know, I feel like my team's going to not be, they're not going to bother me at all, versus now where it's like, bring back, you know, mind games and change the story, etc. Like, but you said, like, we probably have the most confidence here, like, we should win this game. I feel like people like Gary Neville and Roy Keane and the former player, like the former players on the that are going to be on the pundits, that are going to be on the desks, that are going to be in that stadium, are going to talk it up and play up the Anfield storyline narrative, being like, well, it's always difficult to come to Anfield, and you got to be ready for this, and you got to be ready for that. And like, we saw it on All or Nothing. If you watched All or Nothing with the Arsenal, like Mikel Arteta just being like, you have to be ready. Like, it's Anfield. And then he was the one that lost his cool. But Erik ten Hag has to do the opposite. He's got to be like, look, this is a Liverpool team that's struggling. You can't think about Anfield. You can't think about anything. Like, they're struggling. Here's where they're weak. Here's where we're going to attack them. Here's where we're better. We are the better team. Like, don't think about the Anfield factor, because we should win this game. Like, the Anfield factor is, if the more you think about it, the more it may or may, it might, it's possible to cause you fear and to make you nervous and to bring on trepidation. Don't think about that at all, because we should win this game.
And he spoke sort of along those lines. He said something about, like, it's the same as everywhere else we play. You know, the pitch is the same size and stuff like that.
I mean, it's not.
It's
like,
not.
That's because, the right thing to say.
But all, like, not only is it, you know, a little bit smaller probably than, like, I mean, certainly than, like, the Emirates or the Tottenham Hotspur's
new
stadium.
And, like, the
stadium.
Fans are sitting on you.
Like, yeah, no, that,
feel
that's
like they
the
can
thing.
Reach out and grab you.
It is so claustrophobic there. Maybe more so than even, you know, some of the other older stadiums like Goodison Park, where the atmosphere really does have an effect if you let it. I think the positive, though, is a lot of these players have played there before, or, you know, they've played in similar environments. They've just, you know, not, oh, you know, these players haven't won at Anfield, obviously.
They played in similar environments, but, like, I mean, the last time you played at Anfield, it was like last year when everything was going wrong. Phil Jones played in that game. And, like, everything went wrong very quickly. I don't think Rashford played. The year before that, there were no fans. So I think that's a wash.
Yeah.
And the year before that, if you look at that starting 11 from that game, there's not a lot of holdover from that, where we went back three, with Brandon Williams, Luke Shaw played, but Martial, that's about it. I guess McTominay and Fred, Bruno wasn't here yet. So I don't know if all these guys have played in it, but Bruno's played in big matches in Portugal where there's crazy atmospheres. Lisandro Martinez, he's played in the World Cup final. You should not be. I think that's a bit bigger than playing at Anfield. It's definitely not. I mean, as the coach, that is the right message to send. It's another game. The field's the same size. The grass is green. The lines are white, etc. But yeah, it is a little different.
Yeah. I certainly will be unhappy if we lose this game because I have a Sunday league match, my first Sunday league match of the season, an hour later, and many of my teammates are Liverpool fans. So
go in two-footed. I got a text yesterday from my friend who's a Liverpool fan, and it was, oh crap, I forgot that it was United weekend. Please not in the face this weekend. And I'm like, well, if you're worried about that, I went, that's a big change in stature here.
I want to ask your guys' opinion on something. I want to see if you think what I'm thinking. So recently I met two of my girlfriend's friends the other night, and he was a Liverpool fan. He ended up texting her during the League Cup saying, "Hey, tell Nathan, I said go Red Devils."
Sounds like he's not a Liverpool fan.
Yeah, sorry.
Do you think he's playing mind games? He's trying to butter me up so that way he can
this weekend. Any Liverpool fan is confident this weekend, then they're getting some help there from possible substances. Maybe just because of the passion in it, Liverpool, they can expect Liverpool to step up, but the way they've played recently,
That midfield is that, we knew this was going to happen when they went, we've got an old midfield, and instead of, trying to work a youngster in, we're going to go and sign Thiago. And it was you're playing well, but you guys are going to get old. And this is what happens instead of running at 10 miles an hour, you run at 9.98. And then the next year you run at 9.96. And then the next year you run at 8. And Liverpool have gone off that cliff this year. And it's just we have Casemiro. This is the game where Casemiro is going to be a legend after this game, because this has all the makings of a game that he just takes over and does it himself.
If he scores a header, I might lose my shit. I've already tweeted several times this week in the last couple months, I've tweeted out, I'm going to name my firstborn after Casemiro. This might seal it.
Casemiro Heinchel.
Yeah.
You might get some boys from Brazil questions.
Very confused. we'll sneak it into the middle name, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, I another worry this weekend. Obviously, last year there was the whole incident of the Sun song being sung again by the United supporters traveling to Anfield. We shared another thing today, kind of reminding people, but. If we do win, I think that's one of my worries about just the behavior of the United fans in the away end. If they do end up winning there for the first time in, 7 years, I guess it would be.
Police yourselves. Don't be a dickhead.
Yep. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today.
I saw a tweet today that was it was just like, usually Anfield's like the biggest game of the season, and it's like crazy that this year, like, it's the third biggest game this week. And I was like, is it like the big, like,
it's bigger than the West Ham game for sure.
I think it was like Barcelona League Cup final or whatever, but like, I'm trying to think of a season where like the Anfield game was the biggest one of the season. And I think that's just a weird, it's a very like timing of the game scenario. Cause it just came after this League Cup final and when we played Barcelona, but like, don't get me wrong. Anfield every single season is the first match. When the fixture list comes out, it's the first match you circle of, all right, that's the biggie, more so than playing Liverpool at home. But like, clearly you're now looking at it with this other lens of like, well, other games, you know, happen and other games come into play, like, that we didn't know. You know, we didn't know about the Barcelona game until December, and we didn't know about the League Cup final until the end of January. So like, if we're changing games based on like how they happen, I don't think Anfield has ever been the biggest game of the season. Like, once you look at all the other games we played, like, even if we had gotten a huge win, we did win there in 2007, 2008, but like, you know, you'd be like, oh, well, the biggest game of the season was the Champions League final. Just thought it was a weird tweet, unless Colin can be like, actually, there was a season where Anfield was probably the biggest match. Probably Van Persie's first year, but like, it was early in the season. But
yeah, though, and it was also one of many where we had like awesome Van Persie moments to hold on to. I was actually thinking maybe 06-07 when they had the John O'Shea.
Yeah, okay.
Because that was,
but like, AC Milan, bigger game.
Right. Yeah. Or even like, I think
FA Cup final, bigger game.
Beating Roma 7-1 in terms of just like the feeling afterwards, I think.
Well, that's in terms of like, yeah, I mean, in terms of like 2 years ago, Anfield, huge game, but like, that's because like, turned out to be a dull affair, but like, we were top of the table facing the team that had just won the league and were right behind. Like, I think we were level on points at the time. So in that regard, pretty, that one might've actually been the biggest game of the season, because after that, we tied that game, and then we tied another game, and City were in the middle of winning 18 out of 19 to make it not even a title race. So about Europa League final, that one's bigger. So,
yeah. Well,
06-07 is a good show.
I think part of this is, and I talked to Mark about it, maybe on a previous episode, but it's like, the great Man United and great Liverpool eras don't.
Yeah, they don't
cross over.
Yeah,
there's like,
as opposed to like United Arsenal, which is, yeah, like, not a historic rivalry, but it is a historic rivalry because it existed right, yes, when like the Premier League was gaining popularity and yeah, everything.
It's like, the only time that's really happened with United and Liverpool was in the mid 60s, when it was like Bill Shankly would win the league with Liverpool, and the next year it was Matt Busby won it for the first time since Munich, and it kind of went back and forth for a couple of years there. But other than that, it's like, the 70s and 80s totally belong to Liverpool, 90s and 2000s totally belong to United. You know, late 2010s, that was Man City and Liverpool. So I think,
and
it
like,
would
not
be
even
really
that, but like, how many great games did they have between the two of them?
I mean, there were a bunch I guess like the 77 FA Cup final is like one of the historic ones that people look at, because that denied Liverpool the treble.
I'm talking less result and more like great game, because like, United and Arsenal had battles that were like great games, right, to watch. They're great games to go back and watch. Like, there was you know, the 4-1 at Old Trafford where Vidic got roasted. That's a big one for Liverpool. Like, wasn't really a great game. Like, Berbatov's hat trick, that's a big one, but like, yeah, no one really talks about that years later.
And that was like, Liverpool weren't playing that well until the second half, when they like scored two kind of quick goals that were, I think one was a free kick and one was a penalty. So
yeah, like, even Martial's debut goal, like, no one talks about that match. That one wasn't that, yeah, great.
because they were going to win that game anyway.
There's a degree of that with like United Chelsea too, because Chelsea good.
There were some really fun United Chelsea games,
but people don't. Oh, they, yeah,
they yes, ended 1-1, but other.
Like United and Chelsea were 1-2 in a year. Like in were separate. United won the title on the final day of the season in a year where they also played Chelsea in the Champions League final. Like I think that Chelsea team's like the best team to never win anything. Like that they just ran up against a juggernaut, and that those teams like had battles. Those teams had great games. They played in the FA Cup final the year before that. They that there was the 3-3 where like Hernandez scored a bunch and De Gea made that save on Mata, and like still no one even like compares that to United Arsenal. I think that's part of the timing of when United Arsenal like really kicked off. But yeah, like United Liverpool, just I think that you're right, like the great eras didn't coincide, but I just think they don't even play like great games against each other. That, you know, we talk about the Wanfield game because more so because of what happened. He had a great goal and Gerrard got sent off after 45 seconds rather than like, oh, but that was a really good game.
Yeah. So we're due for a classic is what you're saying.
I don't want to talk about what's due. I don't know. I don't want to talk about what's due because one team has at a historic rate not gotten any penalties this season and has taken like they've taken like the most touches in the box like in history with between penalties.
And there's another team who's already used up all their VAR mojo this year.
Yeah. So I don't want to talk about what to do.
Oh. All right, yeah, well,
as far as memorable Manchester United Liverpool games that I've got right now, I mean, I still think of Martial's debut goal because that was the day I bought a Martial shirt. But outside of that, it's probably the game where there was like what, four injuries by the 45th minute.
Yeah, I feel like when you think back at United Liverpool, you think of moments rather than games. Whereas when you go to other teams, you think more games than moments.
Yeah.
Like I think about that De Gea game against Arsenal with Mourinho. Like no one, you talk about that game rather than like, oh, remember that double save on Alexis and Lacazette.
Even like the Ever Suarez, you know, non-handshake game at Old Trafford where it was like one of his first games back from suspension. It was a good game. Nobody really remembers that though, because of, you know, that one particular moment and Rio Ferdinand almost killing Luis Suarez right after it. But two really, you know, nicely worked Rooney goals. And then Liverpool, you know, they had some moments from Suarez. I think he scored a goal late to kind of make it close, but yeah.
Yeah. Like I remember going through, like you go through that 07-08 season. I remember the win at Anfield, like Tevez took that, like, or Anderson, like took that shot cross from the top of the box and Tevez redirected it in. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, I was like, what happened in the other game? Like, and United won 3-0.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And, like, it was like, what happened?
I Wes Brown.
Thing about that game, other than I think Wes Brown crossed one in for Ronaldo to head home.
No, Wes Brown headed home a goal that was crossed by Ronaldo.
Okay, so yeah. I knew Wes Brown was involved. Like, what? Like, no one even remembers that.
I remember that game really well. Yeah. I watched that. I remember watching that game with my grandparents because they were not really into soccer. But I made them sit down and watch.
Was that game visiting that weekend? Was that game one that would get them into soccer, or was that game one to be like, watch a different one?
Look, they were in their 60s and from Ohio, so I don't think I don't know what would have gotten them into soccer at that point. But all right, we are going to end the podcast.
The World Cup final.
We are going to end the podcast here, Nathan.
Okay.
So we'll be back sometime next week. We're going to have Mark Kastner on next week to talk about the Liverpool game, however that results. So that'll be a nice... the last time he was on was before we played Liverpool, the third game of the season. And mm-hmm. we said something along the lines of, like, is this the end of Virgil van Dijk? And I'm really interested to revisit that conversation now. But... for now, we will end the podcast here, and thank you for listening.